Well, what a joy it is to be here today, and we're glad to see you all out and to be with us here on this first day of the week as we have sang praises to God and edified one another, and partaking in the Lord's Supper, having a Bible study. It's been a good morning thus far, and we're glad that you are all here. We do have those that we can be mindful of in prayer who are sick of our number and family members of our members here, and we will do that and see if there's anything that we can do to help them and their struggle back to health. We want to think about this for just a moment. I talked about maybe for some of you, you were able to think about your mother or your grandmother as we talked and thought about the table being ready and all things being ready, the supper's ready. I guess I've been kind of thinking about, you know, those matriarchs of the family here lately, and things that I've had happen to me. So I was thinking about something that I heard a lot growing up. I remember this one particular day. Me and my neighbors, we were all boys. There was four of us all together, and we were, you know, ideal, you know, children growing up. We didn't do any kind of mischief or had any kind of harm or anything, and we had been in and out of the house. We were coming in and out of the house, and in our house it was kind of broke up. The porch on the front porch, it was kind of closed in. We had two doors. That we had a storm door and a regular door there, and then you walked in, and then there was another door because that used to be the real front door, and it was just a wood door. And so then you'd go through it, and he's in the kitchen, and you go through that, and then there was another door, but we took the door down, so it was just a frame. That's how you got in the living room. And, well, so anyhow, through the course of this, you had four doors to go in and out of the house of if you wanted to get you something to drink. So, well, what did Mama always say? She closed the door behind you. So when we closed the door behind us, of course, storm door, it was on springs, so it would just slam shut. We were going in and out of the house, four boys, and every time, every one of us had to open the door. So you had 16 doors opening and closing every time that all of us came in to go get something to drink. And so finally, we would hear, quit slamming the door, get in or stay out. I don't care what you do, just get in or stay out. You make your mind up. Keep the door closed. Quit. Go in or go out. And then finally, the phrase of all phrases, I've had it. I've had it. And you knew that at that point you was about to be restrained to the couch or you was about to be locked out of the house. And we didn't have a key for the door. So when you was locked out of the house, you was really locked out of the house because it only locked from the inside. So, well, this is it. The worm has turned. That was a Shakespeare term. I have had it. This is it. No more. For you Spanish people, no más. This is it. I've had it. Maybe you've said that. Maybe you've said it to your kids. Maybe you said it to your spouse. And maybe you're saying quit talking because she's sitting right next to you. I've had it. We all have those moments where we hit that point of, I've had it. And I oftentimes wonder, does God ever feel the same way about me? Does God ever look at me here on this earth and He go, I've had it. I've had it with you. You know, I get frustrated with myself and I think, well, I'm drawing closer to God. I'm doing more godly things. I'm being about His business. I'm putting forth effort. And then the next thing I know, I turn around and I feel like I'm further than God than I've ever been. And I'm like, man, I'm tired of this ebb and flow and this up and down. And I'm tired of the waves of life and the mountains and the valleys. And I wonder if God looks at me, well, I've had it with you too. And if God does look at us and He says, I've had it, who does He say that to? Does He say that to me? If we think about times where God has said, I've had it, the first thing that came to my mind was the flood. In Genesis chapter 6, beginning verse 5, it says, the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth. How much was the wickedness of man great in the earth? It got so bad that it continues and says this, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them. God had reached the point with mankind during the days of Noah where he had said, basically, I've had it. You were so wicked. You were so evil. You started out eating a fruit that I told you not to eat of. And now, look at you. You have started the downward spiral. Your children killed one another. And now, all the way through this, now your mind is on evil all the time. You're a disgrace. So much so that God even thought to himself, you know, why'd I even do this? Why'd I even make man? Why are they the way they are? Why are you this way? This is so foolish. In our Sunday night children's class, we just finished up this point last week when we talked about this with Sodom and Gomorrah. In Genesis 18, verse 20. The thought before this was, God said, well, should I hide what I'm about to do from Abraham? I mean, he's going to be the father of many nations. He's going to take care of everyone. Should I hide what I am planning from him? Well, what is it that he's planning? He says, no. So he goes and he tells Abraham this. He says, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and their sin is very grave, I will go down to see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry that has come to me, and if not, I will know. Abraham then pleads with him, so much so that he finally gets down. He says, if I can find 10 righteous people, if I can find 10 righteous people in Sodom, would you spare the city? And he said, yeah, I would spare the city for 10 righteous people, but they can't even find 10. There is no righteousness being found in Sodom and Gomorrah. And God has said, I've had it. I'm tired of them being the way that they are. I have had it. I'm going to destroy them. I am going to wipe them off. They are going to be no more. I'm tired of them and their actions and their behaviors. And they are so sinful. It says their sin is very grave. Little did they know the sin that they were committing and how much and how rampant it was leading them to the very grave. God said, I've had it. And we know how the story unfolds in chapter 19 when God rains down fire and brimstone upon the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah and consumes them up. Lot and his family are leaving and fleeing and going away to try to bypass this destruction. In Psalm chapter 81, I believe we finally get to the point to where God has the first admission in my mind of saying out loud, I've had it. I've had it. I give up. This is, what's the point? Psalm chapter 81. We're going to read this whole chapter here. It's just 16 verses, but let's read together. Sing aloud to God our strength. Shout for joy to the God of Jacob. Raise a song. Sound the tambourine, the sweet lyre with the harp. Blow the trumpet at the new moon, at the full moon, on our feast day. For it is a statue of Israel, a rule of the God of Jacob. He made it a decree in Joseph when he went over the land of Egypt. I hear a language I had not known. I relieved your shoulder of the burden. Your hands were freed from the basket. In distress you called and I delivered. I answered you in the secret place of thunder. I tested you at the waters of Meribah. Hear, O my people, while I admonish you. O Israel, if you would but listen to me, if you would have listened to me. There shall be no strange god among you. You shall not bow down to a foreign god. I am the Lord your God, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. Open your mouth wide, and I will fill it. He's saying, don't bow down to these other gods. I'm the Lord your God. I brought you up out of the land of Egypt. I'm going to feed you. When you open your mouth, I'm going to take care of you. But my people did not listen to my voice. Israel would not submit to me. So I gave them over to their stubborn hearts to follow their own counsels. I gave them over. They wouldn't listen to me. They wouldn't listen to anything I was trying to tell them. I was trying to take care of them. When they would listen to me, I would do more than take care of them. I would fill them full. I would deliver them from their enemy. I would do more than they expected, more than they could ever dream about. And here they are with their stubborn hearts because they would not listen to my voice. I'm going to give them up. They can follow after their own wishes, their own counsels. They can do whatever their heart desires. Now I've had it. In verse 13, oh, that my people would listen to me, that Israel would walk in my ways. I would soon subdue their enemies and turn my hand against their foes. Those who hate the Lord would cringe toward Him, and their fate would last forever. But He would feed you with the finest of wheat and the honey from the rock. I would satisfy you, but you would not listen to me. So He says, I give them up to follow their own counsels. When God said, I've had it, and He says, I've had it, He says this, fine. Have it your way. Have it your way. Think about when Israel asked for a king. Now, I want a king. And they said, well, let me tell you about all the problems you're going to have with the king. The king's going to come in. They're going to tax you. They're going to take 30. They're going to take all this stuff from you. Your kids are going to go be in the army. Your women are going to serve him. All of these, your sons and daughters are going to be doomed to go all be about the king. That's going to be the end of it. Well, that's fine. Just give us a king. Well, we just want a king. And God said, I'm trying to tell you, a king is not going to be good for you. Well, we want a king. We want to be like everybody else. It's fine. You have it your way. You have it your way. We'll do it your way. This is the destruction that's going to happen. When man is so filled up and puffed up with himself, and he says to God, I know better than you, God says, well, fine. Try it your way. And when you fall flat on your face, you're going to remember this. God gave them up. You know, that wording and that idea is not let alone just to be in Psalms, but it's also the words that are used in Romans chapter 1. In Romans chapter 1, we're introduced to how evil and how destitute man is going to get when he finally says, I don't need God. Romans chapter 1 and verse 18, it says this, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For His invisible attributes, namely His eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made, so they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor Him as God or give thanks to Him. But they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up. He gave them up in the lust of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie, and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. So what does God give them up? God gave them up in the lust of their hearts to impurity, dishonoring their bodies among themselves. But He continues on and says this, For this reason, God gave them up. He gave them up to dishonorable passions. For their women exchanged the natural relations for those that are contrary to nature. And the men likewise gave up natural relations with women and were consumed with passion for one another, men committing shameless acts with men and receiving in themselves the due penalty for their error. God gave them up. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up. He gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They are full of envy and murder and strife and deceit and maliciousness. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, and ruthless. Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, they not only do them but give approval to those who practice them. See, God gave them up. They gave up God, so God gave them up. That's what really happened. They became consumed with everything around them. They became consumed with the created things rather than the Creator. Well, did they really? Well, yeah, they really did. Sometimes we get focused on things that are not inherently necessarily bad and evil, but they become God to us. They don't have to necessarily be, you know, things that we ought not to be doing. But when they take the place of God, they're in the wrong place. Gave up on God. He gave up. All right, well, it's like this. God says, all right, if you want to turn away from me, I'll let you go. I won't try to stop you, but you'll have to face the consequences of your own actions. This is what you're going to turn into. This is the progression that you are on. This is the direction that you are headed in. If you do not listen to me and honor me as God, sexual immorality is going to become rampant. It is going to consume everything. It is going to take over. It is going to be the thing that is on everyone's mind all of the time. And when that keeps going and that progresses and you still don't turn back to me, you're going to find homosexuality as a common and acceptable practice. And when that doesn't grab anyone's attention and no one sees anything going on from that, that's finally we're going to hit the point where there's going to be unlimited, unrestrained evil. And it's going to persist and it's going to go on. And it's going to be all over everywhere. This is the progression of things that are going to happen. And finally, God says, this is just kind of the end. This is as bad as it could possibly happen. Be. It can't get any worse. When I think about when God said, I don't want you to go because this is what's going to happen. These are the things that are going to happen to you that you're going to experience when you leave me. Now I think about the father of what we refer to as the parable of the prodigal son. And how he was sitting here going, you know, this isn't what you need to do. I know where this is going to take you. I know what this is going to look like when you get there. But he says, fine, if this is what you are bound and determined to do it, I'm going to let you go. I don't think that at all meant that the father stopped loving him. I for sure know that it doesn't mean the father said, all right, fine, you leave, but you're never going to be welcome back here again. Because that's not how it goes. That's not how the story is. hoping against hope that the experience that he is going to happen will cure the desire for rebellion. God lets the human race go deep into sin because he knows that that is the only hope of curing the desire for sin. Because ultimately all of this results into the loss of public morality. Verse 32, think about what was happening. They know God's righteous decree. They know that those who practice such things deserve to die. They not only do them, but they give approval to those who practice them. So what was happening? They knew what they were doing is wrong. They did it anyways. And they praise everyone else for doing wrong too. You know, this is kind of like the lowest of the low. This is the bottom. And it is not a good place to be. The bottom is where you are when evil becomes good and good becomes evil. The bottom is where you are when wrongdoers are publicly praised while defenders of morality are reviled. The bottom is where you are when truth on the scaffold is wrong and wrong is on the throne. The Living Bible translation converts verse 32 in this way. They were fully aware of God's death penalty for these crimes. Yet they went right ahead and did them anyway and encouraged others to do them too. And so many times I look around the world in which I live and I think, are we at the bottom? Because according to this verse, the bottom is when evil is celebrated publicly. And I think, well, you know, the world's a pretty bad place. Then I think about the times where God said, I've had it. What about when he said, I've had it with in the days of Noah? When the world was at rock bottom. You know, they were at the bottom of evil. They were thinking evil only continually. Well, Noah went and preached. Abraham went to look for righteous people. World on evil, God tries to save them. Because when you're at the bottom, that's you don't have anywhere else to look but up. Because you're as low as you can go. When you're at rock bottom, that there's nowhere to go but up. While under God's judgment, it is prime gospel preaching time. And that's what he did. That's what happened with Noah. That's what happened with Abraham. That's what happened with all of the prophets. And ultimately, that is what happened with the world when Jesus Christ came. They were so evil, they were so bad, that here comes the Son of God to deliver them. And Paul writes all of those things about how evil everything has gotten, how evil things are going to get when people deny God and they don't honor God as God. But you know what he told them before he went through that monologue in verses 18 through the rest of the chapter? Let me tell you what he told them. He said, I am so eager to preach the gospel. He said, I am so eager to go and preach the gospel to everybody in Rome. Everybody in Rome that's like this. That's going down this downward spiral. Because he knew when they are at rock bottom, they knew when you are at the lowest low of your point in your life, that is the time where you're ready and you will grasp onto the gospel. And you are waiting for it and you are looking for it. And when we find people that are like those who are described, that God gave them up, that's when we ought to go and find those to preach the gospel to. They find themselves in this dire situation, destitute and abandoned by anything and everything and grasping for straws. And then they get someone to look at them and say, God loves you anyways. Despite your wretched state, God sent His Son to die for you to redeem you out of that sin that you were in. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone. who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Oh, they are wicked. Yeah, they're wicked. But God's power isn't restrained by someone being wicked. Jesus Christ died for the ungodly. Romans chapter 5, beginning in verse 6. For while we were still weak, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. At the right time, when that heart is ready, at the right time physically in the scope of the world and here on this earth, Christ came for the ungodly to accomplish God's will. And I think also, while we are weak, at the right time, Christ appears for us. At the perfect moment when we were in the shape that we were in, when we obeyed the gospel, when we found out about the good news and we took it into our heart, it was the right time for me. And those people that we will run into in the world who are currently weak and lost, perhaps this is the right time for them to find out that Christ died for them. Continuing in verse 7, for one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person one would dare even to die. But God shows His love for us, and that while we were still sinners, that Christ died for us. When we found out how evil it was to leave God, when we found out how rough it is to be away from God, we find out that Christ still died for me. Since Christ died for us while we were still sinners, we have now been justified by His blood. Much more shall we be saved by Him from the wrath of God, being justified by His blood. For if we were enemies when we were reconciled to God by the death of His Son, much more now that we are reconciled shall we be saved by His life. Yeah, we were once enemies. We once were on team evil and Satan and the devil. And we sought after sin. Sin didn't just find me. We went looking for it. We were enemies of Him. We were on covert ops, so much we were enemies. We went out looking for evil, and we did it, tried to do it secretly and remotely. We were enemies, yet we were reconciled to God by the death of His Son. More than that, we also rejoice in God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have now received reconciliation. All of this is saying this. We were bad. We were the worst of the worst. No good, enemies of God. But by Jesus Christ, we have been justified. We have been reconciled. And now we are made alive to God, receiving His reconciliation. So when God says, I've had it, He sends the good shepherd to the sheep. John chapter 10 and verse 10. The thief comes only to steal and destroy, but he says this, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Out of the darkness. Out of darkness, hurting people are longing for the light. If we as believers will let our light shine, they will come. Here is the thing. For us to think about this morning, this week, and hopefully carry with us the rest of our lives. Number one, if you are a Christian, have you let your light shine in dark places? Or do we go near dark places and we go, let me hide it under a bushel? Let me not let everybody know I'm a Christian. Because I sure ain't no more, there ain't no Christians here. Sometimes that's school, sometimes that's work, sometimes that's places we go on business, sometimes that's places that we run into people and we just try to, you know, I'm going to just kind of look like everybody else. The whole time we're fanning the flame inside of us, not wanting the light to burn out, but we're not going to let it shine so bright. Because we can see clearly that these people are as evil can get. Remove the bushel. Take away the shade. Take away the basket and let your light shine. Perhaps you're here this morning and you found out that what it feels like to live without God. And you have heard that even though while you have decided that you're going to live without God, God gave it up. He said, I've had it with you. You go and search out after everything you want in your life. That He still, as the prodigal son's father, stands waiting and wanting you to return to come to Him. And the only way that we can come back to Him and be reconciled to Him and be justified before Him is through Jesus Christ. And that blood was shed on the cross of Calvary so many years ago, but still is true today. If you were washed in His blood, you will be cleansed and you will be white as snow. If you're here this morning and you're subject to the Lord's invitation, we want you to come as we stand and as we sing.